Don't stick in the notes. We're here to have fun and talk about shit.
Good.
Right, Kyle?
Right.
The America versus Chinese trade war is in full effect. Is the Great Reset coming? We're going to get into all of that and the future of where all this leads with the geopolitics, and also maybe some dubious speculation on our conspiracy theories on all of this.
I would expect some dubious speculation, and that's what you're here for. We know it. Welcome back to another episode of Human Reaction, your weekly source for independent commentary on cultural news and politics. I am joined by my esteemed co-host, David Rand, fresh off of his stint in Hustlers University.
Hey, I was at the legislature, sir. They make me dress like this.
If you're watching the video, you know what we're talking about. There's no need to explain.
Let me just say, you should have seen the sunglasses he walked in with, and we're going to get a shot of him right now.
We're going broke!
We're fucking poor!
Not if Trump has anything to say about it, or does he, right? And Kyle Mack, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
Excellent.
It's been a crazy week.
Excellent.
Just studying everything that's been going on. Whew, it's been crazy.
There's a lot going on. Right, David?
That's right. And before you do anything else, just pause. Wait a minute. And ask yourself, you like this show, don't you? You want to support this show. You want to help us reach more audiences? Well, if you like, comment, and subscribe. And I those are all the order of things, but seriously, we get like 60 to 200 views in an episode, but we get 15 likes. What are you doing? Just like the thing.
Right there.
You already like it.
It's right there.
Just like, press the button. If you do that, the algorithm says, hey, people like this, and then it sends it to more people. Please help out the show by doing that. And then if you're on Spotify, leave us a review, please.
This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at RevvedUpPromo.com. That's with two V's and two P's, or just check the show notes for a link.
This will probably be a good episode to share with your friends, because we're going to get into the nitty gritty on this whole trade war dynamic, because there's a lot of nonsense that's going on if you're a Redditor or if you're just like some random person on Twitter right now. It's just like there's a lot of people just saying shit.
Very
none
true.
Of the shit makes sense. Yeah. Right?
Very true. And it seems like it's clicked for you recently, Kyle. It's all the pieces are coming together.
I have a grand theory in play right now.
We're going to call it Max Theory.
Kyle's
theory?
I'll take it.
Yeah,
take it.
I like
Max
it.
Theory?
I wouldn't say it's only my theory. There's other people out there with like the same thought process.
You just
got to
own it.
Down.
You just got
to
own
this
it.
This is your theory.
But Grok seems to agree with me.
Ooh.
That's the thing. I had a lot of conversations with Grok this week.
Yeah.
And Grok has...
How's he doing?
Grok's doing well.
Good.
I think it's very clear Grok is probably the future of AI just because how many people are feeding him stuff. Like, getting all this information, especially when it comes to news and politics and stuff like that. Grok's just way more advanced than everyone else.
Did we just assume Grok's gender?
Grok's a dude.
Yeah, definitely dude.
Yeah,
talks like a dude.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
Unless you have it on sexy mode. Then
and then you're not so sure.
Grok might be a little trans. Wears a lot of different hats. Speaking of hats, I got a meme. This actually came from a Chinese official. They posted this. We got a Giblified Make America Great Again hat. It says made in China. It says $50 and it's crossed out and says $77.
This is really good.
This embodies the moment
in
such an amazing way.
It does.
Right? Right. So in the past, just imagine like our ancestors in the 1870s debating tariff policy. And then someone showing up in Congress and being like, look at this funny meme about your stupid idea from another country, you know? That's the equivalent of what's happening here, and I'm here for it.
Oh, absolutely.
Like it. It's really fun here.
So this week, we're getting into the trade war. We talked a lot about the tariffs because last episode, Trump had just imposed the tariffs. There was the big glorious chart that it was like 90% to Vietnam and all this and all the and everything. Since then... Trump has peeled back the tariffs. A lot of people would say he caved, but that is the bullshit retarded way to look at it. That's not what happened.
Can I just check in on the Penguins? How are you faring in your trade war right now?
Calls were made. Deals have happened. 10% reciprocal tariffs on McDonald Island. Because, well, this is actually an important thing. And this is something that I kind of wish I maybe stated a little bit more when we were memeing about the penguin thing. The McDonald Island thing, that was the IQ test. Because that's where the loopholes are going to run through.
Interesting.
That was the IQ test.
China's going to be moving into that.
I don't think we have to at this point. But the whole thing is like that. There was going to be routed, trade going through McDonald Island. So they're stamping that off and putting tariffs on that island, right?
I see.
Are there businesses on the island to route it through?
Yeah, people put their businesses there despite there being zero population. Right.
Oh, so they register it on paper.
Yes.
And then they
ship it there and then move it out. Right.
Yeah. Why don't they just do that to Israel or any other country?
That's why everybody has 10% tariffs, right?
Oh, that'll teach them.
Yeah, everybody has the 10% reciprocal tariffs, right?
Well, except for Israel, didn't they drop their tariffs?
Well,
they dropped
right now. Negotiations are happening. Right.
Sure.
So okay. Everybody is at a flatline 10% right now. While negotiations are happening.
I got you.
Except for China.
Who's still at what is it now? 125?
I think it's 140 at this point. They keep going up and
my
up.
My bet is on 420. We're going to end at 420. It's going to be.
And 69.
I said, let's crank this up to 4,000. Let's just keep it going. Because there's a play that's happening here. And that's what I want to get into today.
Sure.
Right. So the tweet that shocked the world and kind of sent markets all crazy, because it is funny, because this is where the Democrat. Let me do the tweet first. So. Trump said, based on the lack of respect that China has shown to the world markets, I'm hereby raising the tariff charged to China by the United States of America to 125%. He has since raised that even further since this tweet. Effective immediately. At some point, hopefully in the near future, China will realize that the days of ripping off the USA and other countries is no longer sustainable or acceptable. Conversely, and based on the fact that more than 75 countries have called representatives of the United States, including Departments of Commerce, Treasury, and the USTR, to negotiate a solution to the subjects being discussed relative to trade barriers, tariffs, currency manipulation, non-monetary tariffs, and these countries have not, at my strong suggestion, retaliated in any way, shape, or form against the United States. I have authorized a 90-day pause and a substantially lowered reciprocal tariff during this time of 10%, also effective immediately. Thank you for your attention on this matter. I love the sign-off. Thank you for
your attention.
Thank you for your attention.
That was not written by Trump, right?
No, it was written by Lutnick, Besant, and Trump.
Oh.
They all had a meeting together and wrote the tweet together.
Well, I have to say, that was an enormous run-on sentence, and it was exhausting to listen to.
Thank you for your attention on this matter. I don't see it. So
I just want to back up one step, because when we left this, it was tariffs were kind of fresh, right? We had just had the announcement of on Liberation Day and all that stuff, and maybe there's some stuff in between there, but really at this point, the strategy of the tariffs being a tool to bring people to the table to negotiate tariffs down seems to be what is taking place. Does that seem accurate?
And it's what they have been saying the entire time.
Right. Right? So it seems to be working.
Like last episode, I brought forward the stuff from March. There's stuff of before Besant was even Treasury Secretary, where he's talking about this, of what the strategy would be of you escalate to de-escalate, and then we are going to reformat trade deals in a new economic order around the world. This has been the plan, right?
So there's different people are weighing different people's statements differently, right? So if you're, I think, a mainstream press person, you're weighing Trump's statements about how great it is to get more revenue from tariffs, which he's done a lot, or why it's always bad to have a trade balance deficit. And then you weigh that and you're underweighing Lutnick's no tariffs eventually. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So people are weighing it differently and then getting confused when the execution isn't that. So this does indicate that it is an indicator that the trade balance stuff isn't as important as other variables that they're trying to shoot for.
Yep.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
So ultimately that's
where
a lot of
it's a factor, but it's not the supreme overall factor that is of the utmost importance.
Right. Well, underweighing the other variables you brought up last time, Kyle, we want to actually impose a recession so that way, or at least cause a recession to be triggered, because what we want to do is lower the interest rates and blah, 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 blah. All those arguments then get kind of washed aside as people are focused on Trump's statements around why having a trade balance deficit with, Paraguay is really bad. Right.
Right.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there is some significance to that, and maybe now is a good time to bring up Triffin's dilemma just super briefly, because it kind of illustrates that.
Okay.
I mean, so Triffin's dilemma is just a fundamental conflict within the international monetary system. Basically, any country who is the world's reserve currency has to balance two priorities, one being their domestic economic needs, you know, your own jobs and growth and inflation, versus supplying enough currency to the world to satisfy the demand for debt and trade and reserves and things like that, right? Which means running a trade deficit, mm-hmm. sort of by default. And that's what we've been in basically since like the 1960s, effectively, in this country. The problem is supplying the world enough currency by running trade deficits can undermine confidence in your currency over time, which is something that we're seeing. Obviously, we're seeing inflation as a result of it as well. So what we're kind of stepping into is something more resembling a prioritization of domestic stability, limiting deficits, which is going to sort of, in effect, starve the global economy to some degree of the liquidity that we've seen, potentially causing some of these like trade, you know, conflicts and financial disruptions to the markets, which we're definitely seeing at this moment. So,
and it's always important to remember, this is why I talked a lot about Bessent last time around, is because I was kind of architecting where this is going, because Bessent is the guy who wrote the playbook on crashing other currencies, mm-hmm. right? He's the guy that did it.
Yeah.
And we're watching currency manipulators, mainly the EU and China, and we're watching them fall away from their peg. Because
what does that mean?
So in China, there's the they have the PBOC, the People's Bank of China. They have a currency peg where the it kind of like stabilizes around like a 2% swing, and then they use that swing to be able to manipulate the currency for more favorable deals on trade and the like. Like sure. This is when they're talking about the currency manipulation. This is what they're talking about, right? The yuan crashed to its lowest rate in the last 2 decades during all of this.
Oh, wait, like within the last week?
Yeah. Just like over the last 2 days.
And how significant of a crash was that?
So it's breaking the peg. It's a thing where there's probably still months at play here. Like when Soros and Bessent and Druckenmiller, when they broke the Bank of England, that was only like a $40 billion deal. With China, it's like a $3 trillion deal. Like they got a lot of capital here to right. be able to maneuver. And a lot of people were saying that like, oh, the China's dumping their treasuries and that's why the treasury yield's going up and they're dumping their treasuries and all this stuff. China wasn't dumping their treasuries. That's their last resort. That's actually part of their policy is that's their last resort. It was actually more like Japan and Europe were dumping their treasuries. We know Europe for sure was dumping their treasuries.
Okay. So just in the interest of keeping the layman involved here, what is the significance of dumping treasuries?
So... The reason why I laid out the treasury and the 10-year bond rate for yields last episode was I was talking about every basis point that it goes down. That's about $100 billion saved on interest per year.
Right.
Because we have to refinance $9 trillion worth of debt this year. Because Janet Yellen left behind this whole massive problem for the new administration.
Right. Like, because she basically bought debt that was all set to mature during this administration.
Yep. Yep. Well, there was also other debt to mature.
So, right? And just reminder, treasuries are a promise to pay you back.
Right.
Yeah. It's an IOU.
From the government.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically when those mature, we now have the Treasury Secretary that now has to become a bond salesman and they have to put everything up for auction and so on and so forth. Right.
Gotcha.
But all these other countries, they all own U.S. treasuries and this is like a big part of their portfolios. It's stable and whatnot.
Yeah. So China's peg broke, their currency
not
crap.
Fully, but it's like faltered.
It came right? down quite a bit, right? So what? That's obviously not a good thing for them. What kind of position does that put them in?
Right now, well, how they're responding right now is actually I got a funny clip that I want to see. So like they're doing this tit for tat of amping up the trade here the tariffs here and. The funny thing about this is like one of the things is like, yeah, we're going to limit United States cultural exports. So Hollywood can't put their movies here anymore. And I got a funny clip from Trump talking about like when he was asked about it. Yeah. So here's Trump being asked about that.
China retaliated today by reducing the number of American films that can be shown there. What's your reaction to them now targeting cultural exports from the United States?
I think I've heard of worse things.
China retaliated. They won't get to watch Sleeping Beauty.
No.
Snow White?
Snow White, yeah.
Disney's new blockbuster bomb?
Yeah, they won't get the enjoyment of watching that. How could we? I mean, our cultural export, they'll be less like America now.
Look, they were planning to ban that anyways in China. They were like, we don't want this shit. No, 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 no. So like, this is a good excuse. Let's just throw it in.
Take that.
Well, and that's the thing. So I have a clip here from Secretary Bessent of him being asked about the tariff and the tariffs from China and how he feels about that. So we'll play that.
Maria, I think it's unfortunate that the Chinese actually don't want to come and negotiate because they are the worst offenders in the international trading system. They have the most imbalanced economy in the history of the modern world. And you know, I can tell you that this escalation is a loser for them, that they have some very smart, the economist, the academicians, technocrats within their bureaucracy, and they would be telling the leadership that we do not have the edge here. They are the surplus country, that their exports to the U.S. are five times our exports to China. So you know, they can raise their tariffs, but so what? Maria, I think it's unfortunate.
They can raise their tariffs, but so what? Well, that's their attitude.
If you're an American exporter to China, that's a big deal.
Yeah, for right. sure.
Yeah.
So on a more micro scale, it's a problem. But on the macro scale, he doesn't seem to think it's a problem.
Well,
I mean, or is he just putting up, you know, a strong front here as a negotiating tool?
So what that shows is there are winners and losers in this situation, right? The winner in America within the American dynamic, and what you would anticipate is that American exports, mostly in ag to China, are going to get hit really hard, right? What are they going to do with that beef? Or soybean or whatever that they're selling off to China.
That is something
where beef people.
That is actually one of the areas where I could see there being big calls for a future like farmer bailout.
Oh, for sure.
coming with this whole thing.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the biggest areas of maybe concern on our end of this trade war is that bailout possibilities. But that's also when we're talking about this whole thing is like the way that I look at the whole dynamics of what happened is that this was a massive deleveraging event. And what that means is Wall Street has been way overlevered ever since 2020. Like they've been constantly getting overlevered, but
the last major
leveraging, like deleveraging event was during COVID, March 2020, where we saw the massive stock market crash that happened because of COVID.
And what
that means is that they're overleveraged is that there's a lot of money borrowing for Wall Street to fund their bets. Mm-hmm. That's all that means right now.
Right. So you're borrowing money to bet on stocks or, you know, options or whatever it might
be. And one of the biggest things is something that's called the basis trade. The basis trade is a trade between current cash treasury bonds and the arbitrage between that and the futures contracts on those bonds. This is like the biggest trade that hedge funds have been using because they're supposed to be one of the safest trades because like the spread is so thin, but then they borrow at like 20x and put it on top of that.
Hmm.
That fell apart during all of this.
Interesting. So can you explain the arbitrage piece for folks that aren't familiar?
You don't have to get too specific into the details, but like largely it's just you're looking at the spread between the current rate of the treasury bonds and where the future holds on it. And you're
making a bet mm-hmm. whether it's going to go up or down and trying to make money on the difference between the current price.
And the spread is so marginally thin because it's such like a stable market traditionally until there's major events like COVID.
Right.
Or a global trade war.
Right.
And then all of that falls apart. So in COVID, it was like $500 billion that were at threat of liquidation before the Fed stepped in and tried to cover for it. Right now, it's $1.5 trillion.
Oh.
So we're much further along on how disastrous this basis trade could be.
And that gets into the leveraging part. That gets into why the trade war isn't what's going to cause a recession. The trade war is a signal mm-hmm. of futures concerns about where our capital markets are going to go. That's when we see everything go down. That's why the stock market isn't the economy.
Yes.
But that is a triggering mechanism to underlying weaknesses in the economy of like doubling our M2 money supply after COVID that we are currently running on, you know, effectively a printing machine, right? We're running on a lot of extra debt, a lot of extra money sloshing around the system that isn't backed by a productivity gain within the economy. So when all that is revealed and people go like, okay, well, we got to go back to basics. We can't just bet to increase our margins anymore.
Yep.
We actually have to produce something. And they look at their actual structures of production and it doesn't work.
Yep.
Right. It's not there. So then the market and the economy crashes and we go into recession. And does that make sense? So
yep.
And this is where always in historically what happens is people go, oh, Wall Street went down, therefore the economy went down, right?
Right.
But what's really happening is the bets on the future were off because we manipulated the signal to suggest that there were production capabilities that weren't actually there.
Because there was too much money in the system, which is a signal of, you know, people are ready to produce.
Right. 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 And that's the Austrian business cycle theory to why recessions happen. They're not necessary to happen. They're not like the inevitable result of animal spirits or, you know, whatever. What they are is a misallocation of the signaling mechanism of interest rates and the amount of credit in the system because it isn't backed by savings deferred to consumption now. Instead, it sends this false signal that then gets people to over-leverage and then find themselves in a situation where everybody is making the same mistake because everyone's relying on the same signal. What is the price of money?
Right.
Well, and this is again the reason why last episode I was hyping up Bessent so much, because this is what he's been doing. He's been going on Tucker Carlson. He's been going on All In podcast. He went and spoke last week to the bank, to the American Bankers Association, and he's having the the phrase that he's using is, well, there's like two main things. It was like it's a Mag 7 problem, not a MAGA problem, right? We talked about that, which is like a really very cold. Like when you actually know what that means, like it's a very cold statement. And then the other is that Wall Street's had their fun for decades and now it's 4 years of Main Street.
Right. Which basically what they're trying to say is instead of exporting financial services and money, debt, we're going to be bringing the focus to rebuilding an industrial base and rebuilding sort of our domestic production capabilities.
The challenge is if you can actually do that though.
Right.
And also, on top of that is another aspect there is I lost what I was going to say there. A lot of the reasons why these financial services are so over-levered on everything is because they're expecting bailouts. And Bessent's essentially signaling to them, watch yourself. We're deleveraging here. We are protecting the American economy. Because Bessent saw what happened, not only saw what happened, he orchestrated what happened in London.
With the crash
in 1992 with Soros. He orchestrated it because he saw highly inflated housing markets, unstable yield curves, like kind of this manipulation of currency and the currency peg going on and so forth. Like he saw all that and then they pulled the trigger and then that's what ended up being what broke the Bank of England. He's like I would look at him as like a white hat hacker in protecting this by deleveraging the American economy on all of this stuff. So like these crashes aren't like the inevitable crash that is to come is not so painful.
Interesting. So well, I guess my question here is if he was one of the orchestrators of the crash of the Bank of England, is this going to crash the Federal Reserve? Are there parallels between those two events where he's doing the same thing here?
I think that in the global reordering, I think that we're probably going to move. I suspect we begin to move away from the central banking scheme in a sense, not fully. Like it's not going to be like the libertarian wet dream of like abolishing the Federal Reserve.
dang it!
but like the impact of that, there's a lot more of a push towards. And again, this is another thing that Bessent's been saying. He said this to the Bankers Association this week, of all these big bank regulations that are helping prop up the banks. We're doing away with that stuff. We are your mom and pop banks and your local banks. We're going to be trying to create regulatory schema that helps them. That is a major feature of the Trump administration and what we're wanting to do.
That is one thing that's been a trend since after 2008. There was Dodd-Frank was meant to keep the financial crisis from ever happening again by regulating the hell out of banks. What happened from Dodd-Frank was a large consolidation of banking power into the largest banks. So a lot of, and I remember this, I was in Congress in 2013, we did tons of meetings with local and regional banks who were struggling under Dodd-Frank at the time. A lot of them would go out of business or be bought by larger banks. So we see this huge, as usual, this is common across the economy. Regulation causes a steeper tier to your economic system that allows just the biggest people to survive all the regulatory burden.
Right, because the small guys can't afford all the compliance and all that stuff.
That's right.
And it just doesn't work for their model.
And therefore, weakness in the system, right? So one error on one bank has much more cascading effects because they're making one bet, as opposed to many smaller banks making many bets, and therefore it levels out that phenomena.
Yeah. A little safer.
It's worth noting too, China's currently in a recession as well as all this is going on too. There's reason to believe that April 2nd was a strategically significant event as well to get all this stuff going, because it's like Lunar Festival holiday season in China, which gives kind of the rest of the world a little bit of an edge over on the trading side.
Does that explain the ChatGPT formula? Is that and kind of like pulling it together on a wiki article? Because they're like, oh, wait, it's the lunar calendar? We got to get this off the ground right now. Let's go. Well, how do we want to do it? Well, we'll put it into ChatGPT. What does it say? All right, that sounds good. And then we just, you know, like that.
They're playing hurry up offense right now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Caught him sleeping.
Well, and that's kind of
how can you tell?
That's kind of the thing here is like a lot of the lead up here for months. And this is why like the plan aspect, like everybody's just looking at this as like, oh, Trump's just doing this crazy like thing. Like, no, this stuff was orchestrated. This is the reason why guys like Besant are on the team. It's the reason why guys like Letnik are on the team. Like they've been orchestrating and they've been whiteboarding the different possibilities that could be occurring here. Like there's a reason why they kind of obfuscated how crazy that chart was going to be. Like, and the chart was never going to be the intended tariffs. Right. In the end of this,
you want them to think it will be, yes, so that they act, but you don't act them. And the whole argument is that they're not actually going to be the real tariff rates.
And the important thing too here is like who are the first people that lined up on negotiations and the ones that they're hyping everybody up on? Vietnam, Japan, South Korea, India. Where do all those reside in the world? It's all the people surrounding
proximate
China.
To China,
right? Like Besson just had a talk with the deputy communist leader of Vietnam. His name is very funny. It's Ho Duck Fuck.
No, that is not funny. No one at home should be laughing right now. If you are, you're a bad person. If you're a bad person, tell us in the comments.
I'm just sorry. I don't know. I don't think you have to censor me. That's his name. Like here, I'll pull it up. I'll pull up the image of our tall leader Besant and the little Ho Duck Fuck next to him.
I was taking this so seriously until this very moment.
We gotta laugh because we're going through an economic reshuffling here.
We just did a lot of finance and big monetary talk.
During today's meeting to confirm the start of formal discussions on reciprocal trade with Deputy Prime Minister Ho Duck Fuck of Vietnam, I emphasize the need for continued engagement and quick demonstrable progress to resolve outstanding issues.
Nice.
We are all 13. Thank you. Wow,
that will never not be funny. No, come on, the guy's name's Ho Duck Fuck.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
I think it's probably folk, but it's funny.
I'm actually not so sure about that because every pho restaurant, right?
Right.
That's Vietnamese cuisine, is it not?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's all pronounced pho with an O. Mm-hmm.
He's just trolling the Americans. His name means I like noodles.
A lot. So much, in fact.
Well, and this is another thing too, is like they're saying that there's 70 countries that have lined up and are calling them nonstop for agreements. That doesn't even necessarily have to be true.
Yeah.
When we're talking about the art of the deal, right? I was like, we got some very confirmed people that really do want to be part of these agreements, but like all the other countries, they don't know who's lined up for the agreements yet.
Right. And this is so interesting because it's sort of similar to the whole idea of having John Bolton enter a negotiation on foreign policy because it's like, he's the crazy guy.
That's Peter Navarro.
We don't know what he's going to do. Was it Peter Navarro?
No, I'm saying...
No.
Oh, Peter Navarro said that?
In this situation...
It's Peter Navarro.
That's Peter Navarro. Yeah. Yes, the crazy tariff man.
Right. So now it's like, everybody's on edge. The tariff rates initially rolled out were just to scare them to the table, and now they don't know who's coming to the table, but everyone thinks everyone's coming to the table, so they've got them all mixed up.
Well, and we saw this too, is like, so Peter Navarro was out being like, tariffs, he's doing the crazy John Bolton thing, but on trade, right? And to the point where we were seeing all the billionaires around Trump, Elon Musk called Peter Navarro a fucking retard. We like on Twitter, like these are tweets. Right?
Yeah.
You have Bill Ackman freaking out. He's the bottom of every cycle. Every single cycle, he marks the bottom. Like he's always the day before the bottom is when he panics and freaks out.
Awesome.
He's the real inverse Kramer. Like that's what like real traders know that.
right? There's your alpha people.
And then a day later, he's just like, man, Trump orchestrated this so well. like go on his Twitter page and you'll see the freak out.
My conspiracy theory is that they're in on it. Kramer and guys like Ackman, you know, and instead of actually saying, oh, now's a great time to buy Bitcoin. And then it crashes. It's like, he's the like wink, wink to the people in the know to get the fuck out.
I don't know. I think Ackman is actually just, he was the COVID, bottom signal. Like, he was the guy for that. Like, on the march, on the dark day in March when everything crashed like crazy, Bill Ackman was at the beginning. He was like the most vocal person of the need for QE, stepping in, all this stuff. He was the guy. Like,
but so, how much is that an input rather than an output?
Maybe, I don't know.
It's hard to tell what's wagging the dog here.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's the nature of bets, right? We're talking about the future, which is impossible for people to know. Therefore, people are making multiple bets. And then you got people with big voices who make a bet, and then everyone's actually thinks that it's a counter signal so that it throws off the entire
calculus. And this is the thing, like, Bill Ackman was even calling out Howard Lutnick, Commerce Secretary, where he's saying, like, he's just all in on treasuries. He's just like lambasting him on Twitter, right? And then the day later, there's like, man, this tag team of Besant, Howard Lutnick, and Trump, they just did such a good job. And it's like, I only care about outcomes. So, I might have been wrong, but I'm outcome focused.
What's the hierarchy? What's the hierarchy you take here, Kyle? Is it the Reddit, like, Trump caved on tariffs, which is so weird? It's such a strange dynamic.
It's so dumb.
Right?
Because that's the mainstream take.
Yeah, they're trying to own Trump by saying, like, he should have tariffed harder now after, like, a week of them saying tariffs are terrible.
Redditors are going to be out with Chinese flags out at protesting at universities in the next, like, month, probably.
Don't get me wrong. I like the fact that the left has suddenly decided that marginal utility is a thing and, you know, that transfer costs are a thing.
They don't
care. The price pays a role in the economy.
Yeah.
I wish they would recognize the elasticity applies just to trade, but also to regulatory burdens, right?
Sure.
You know, but I don't think they're going to get there. But they are all of a sudden now on our side. So that's an interesting moment.
Are they? Like, here's the thing is, like, I'm not on that side. Like, I'm trying to make that, like incredibly clear that I'm not on that side.
That price signals are a thing?
No. That whatever you're talking about with, like, the left is agreeing with us, I'm like, no, they're not. They're being idiotic. What are you talking about?
I'm joking. My tongue is thoroughly in my cheek here, but it's just funny to me to watch them suddenly embrace economics as a source of knowledge and understanding about the economy, when otherwise they'd say that's just propaganda given to you by the Koch brothers.
Which they will never apply to anything else if it doesn't own Trump.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right.
That's the unfortunate kicker. Yeah. Is they only agree because it's convenient.
Because it matches their political goals.
It's useful idiots. It's useful idiots. Correct. Right. Like that's all they are.
When we get AOC pumping out Milton Friedman clips, then we'll know we've won.
That'll never happen.
She's like, this pencil cannot be created by anyone. And it's going to be great.
It is funny because a friend of mine, he tweeted out something that was just like, he said something along the lines of like, yes, we all understand that 90% tariffs on China is a bad thing. That's not the point of what's happening right here. And then the tweet below was, you're writing a tweet about a pencil right now, aren't you? Because you have to understand is like, yes, everybody involved in all this, except for maybe Peter Navarro, understands that 90% tariffs are not great. The negotiating tool is what matters in this entire situation.
I don't know what you're talking about. We used to fund the entire government with tariffs, and that was a great time, Kyle.
Well, and they're also saying like they'll say like 10% tariffs for like this thing, unless anybody negotiates down to 0%, they'll do that. And we'll have the funding that comes with this. Like, apparently they're saying that we're getting $2 billion a day right now on the most recent stuff on the Chinese tariffs or something. I don't know what all those numbers work out to right now, but like the most interesting thing to me right now is watching the actual shifting of the global economic order right now. Like, we're watching that in real time. We're watching the beginnings of like a new Bretton Woods agreement. Like, we're seeing, like, this is the historical moment that we're living in, and it's fascinating to watch.
Yes.
So to return to the Triffin thing, to what degree are we looking at this as a sustainable model, right? Because there is a demand for us to continue to pump out treasuries, right? And as long as we're in this trade war, there's a huge disincentive for them to be buying treasuries. Mm-hmm. So how do you exit from here to there is, I think, the real question of next steps.
Yeah, that is the big thing is because we talked about last time where when these tariffs were announced, the 10-year yield dropped below 4, and Besson's goal is to bring it down to 3.5, right? It in the aftermath of all this stuff over the last week, it went back up to 4.5. Mm. So the yields, like, there's still work to be done there.
We got
to
bring back tariffs, heavier tariffs.
Now, the biggest thing for this right now is I think the ongoing plan of what seems to be is tax cuts for growth. Mm-hmm. Deregulation. There's a lot of talk coming from Lutnick and Bessent on deregulation right now. Like everything that you guys have been saying was like, they should have been done doing this first. Like they're very hyper fixated. They're moving their focus on that
okay.
right now.
Okay.
Like all you have to do is just listen to them. Right? Like right. they say it.
Right.
The problem for most people is they're not listening to the people.
Well, and the question is, are they doing mm-hmm. it? Right. So it's one thing to say it and to signal, because that's really good for markets, mm-hmm. but it's not great if that never actually embodies itself in something that looks like real deregulation.
Well, and this is the thing.
On the big stuff, on the hard stuff.
This is the big thing that Bessent said is like tax cuts will be the easy thing. Mm. Deregulation is the thing that's going to take a lot of time.
Yeah.
And he straight up said that. I think he said that on Tucker. It was mm-hmm. like, that is the area where it's like, that's probably the biggest risk to the overall plan. Like he didn't say it in those words, but like he was signaling.
Well, that and a budget cut, right? Because if it doesn't correlate with a budget cut, you still have a problem with interest rates and you have a problem with the deficit and paying on the deficit and you have a problem with demand for dollars, mm-hmm. right? Because if you're printing a bunch of money, that's going to go someplace, right? So how do you reduce that demand so you can get the interest rate you want? You got to cut the budget. Where are they going to, does Congress have the political will to do so?
Well, and the big thing too is like on the market side, we're not out of the woods yet. Like there was this massive jump that happened because of the pause.
Yeah.
It is kind of funny as I called the exact bottom last episode. I said the bottom would be when Bitcoin hit $74,000 and that was the exact bottom and it double tapped there.
Wow.
Now we will see if it goes lower because we probably will go back and retest that. And I'm using Bitcoin as like a macro indicator.
Sure.
Right.
But which is an interesting thing to do right there. Right there is an interesting thing. You're using Bitcoin to describe the overall market, which.
Well, because market trends are market trends, but it's just, I'm a crypto guy. So I focus on Bitcoin as like my macro indicator more so than I do the S&P or the NASDAQ
or
something.
Right? Sure.
Where normal traditional finance bros, they'll be using, they'll be using the NASDAQ or something.
Bitcoin is your S&P.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But I could see us retesting and failing the retest down there and maybe going to your 60,000 bingo bet, Joe. I could see that. Right now, it's not quite there yet, but like depending on how this like upheaval, like there's a lot of shit going on in Europe right now.
Yeah.
Like Europe is the one selling off all their treasuries right now. Oof. Europe is the one artificially pumping the euro right now.
I would never support a country currency manipulating.
Would never do that.
I hate that term. Can I just talk about that for a second?
Do it.
I hate that term. Ever since in the post-Bretton Woods Agreement, ever since we've dropped off the gold standard, that is like the definition of everything in money markets.
of all central banking.
Yes, exactly. So it's like the most tautological statement ever. It's like, how dare you manipulate money? So like, that's the entire thing that everyone is doing. And I'm not saying that therefore there's no criticism that's valid there, or there's nothing to say about its implication on trade. It was funny because I put out a tweet and it kind of blew up, and it was about like what's the best way to solve for a trade deficit. And beyond the autists being like, there's no way to, you don't have to solve for it. It's like, I know, I get that, but like if you're going to, right? But beyond that, there was a lot of discussion about one of the things that pulled really big was ending the Fed. And they're like, there's no effect on ending the Fed on trade dynamics. And I was like, bro, that's actually not true. There's actually lots of literature about how monetary policy affects our trade.
Sure. Well,
interest rates affect liquidity in a market. Like that's just, and liquidity is like the lifeblood of all markets.
Especially trade, because trade is done so much on futures, right? It is your ability to bet where things go and what the demand curve for that is that you're going to be able to make a profit. So there's tremendous downstream effects of those money decisions on those things. So therefore, rant over. I just wanted to hit that note because every time it says like there's a part of my brain goes, ah! But yeah.
Well, and the interesting thing too is because, Bessent, I'm just like really hyping up Bessent so much, but he's the core of everything in what's going on right now.
Take a drink and get that cock out of your mouth for a second.
Oh,
he is gay. Like, ho duck fuck over here.
No, he's more into bestiality.
But he's at the center of everything because he, like, one of the most fascinating things right now is like, this is the first time I've ever seen a Treasury Secretary be so like influential in everything. And like to the point where there was polling done on Trump's cabinet yesterday. And who was at the top of the approval ratings of everybody in the cabinet? It was Bessent.
Wow.
Like higher than Tulsi, higher than Cash.
Was
higher
JD
than,
high after the whole "you didn't say thank you" thing? Was that his peak? And he's been going down.
He peaked in high school.
I don't think JD was part of the polling on that. I think it was just like cabinet members.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
But like, it's just like
that is super interesting. It is interesting. Usually it's like Secretary of Defense and like Secretary of State. Like they're usually the more visible cabinet members.
Well, and he wasn't this big like famous guy going into it too.
Right.
Like even I didn't really know who Besant was when he was named. Like all of us were skeptical of him coming in. Because we were looking at the Soros connection and we were all kind of like, this is weird.
Yeah.
Is he just going to be another Mnuchin fellow? No, he's not another Mnuchin fellow. Yeah, like that's the interesting thing about it, to me at least. But yeah, anyways.
Also, he's been very visible, which is not necessarily true. Usually like
he's
a
also
treasury
leading
guy
the negotiations.
He's on like CNBC saying like, oh, stock market good. You know, like that's it with like pre-canned stuff. He's hitting podcasts. He's doing long form. He's way more visible than most treasury secretaries have been to regular viewers, not just like financial market viewers. You know, so that's also interesting.
Well, and I don't think that trade has ever been so central to an administration, at least not in my lifetime.
Well, definitely not in our lifetime. I mean, it used to be, right? Sure. It used to be tariff rates were the number one discussion, or monetary policy was the number one discussion in the country, right? Yeah. Pre-Fed.
Yeah.
So
a long time ago.
This is where I want to open up speculation on where we're going.
Let's go.
Because I got some thoughts. I got some thoughts after watching the capital markets, especially in Europe. A lot of things clicked together for me when I watched what Europe did, and then I like thought back to COVID, and then I thought back to just I give a lot of nods to MI6 and them psyoping us in America on this podcast. If you've never noticed that, I've always had this like thesis in the back of my brain where I'm like, I don't trust these British folks in American politics.
Agreed.
As solidified by Douglas Murray versus Jason. Yes. That they made me more skeptical. Like,
Because like it started, like, everything started to come together, and I was just like, yeah, China's a thing that is like worthy being considered and worried about on the overall geopolitical landscape. I think that's important. But then like I started coming to all these thoughts. I was like, but so many of America's problems are stemming out of the mind viruses coming out of Europe. Right? Think
World
back
Economic Forum.
Yes.
You know, central bank.
All the Atlanticism, all the foreign policy Atlanticism, right? So we're talking about
the ESG mind virus.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
DEI stuff.
Yep.
Like all these climate, like all things climate change. Where did the Russia hoax come out of?
Europe.
UK.
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. It was a UK spy that was, contracted by the Hillary Clinton campaign to write the Steele dossier.
Who disrupted peace talks with Ukraine?
Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
Right?
Love his hair.
Yeah.
Great hair.
He's just a wannabe Trump haircut. Right?
He's not trying hard enough. He needs to try a little harder.
Okay. So you're kind of pulled in like...
Who's building the biggest wedge between Russia and the United States? And that's been such a historical phenomenon. Because for a long time, going back all the way to the Civil War, this was always the British Empire's like big concern, was a Russia-American alliance going through Alaska.
Ooh, yep.
And the trade that would be coming down through that.
Yep.
Ever since then, that's always been a big concern.
Because it would bypass them and they would lose out.
Yeah. And it started coming into my head. Is like, everybody's like so worried about this country or this country. And I was like, the real enemy is Europe. And we're watching them collapse. We're watching them collapse in real time right
Says
now.
Says a Canadian. This is why.
This is why Canada and Greenland are important. And all of a sudden, Trump gets elected and he's just like, and we're getting Greenland. That's cutting off Greenland from Denmark and control of the Arctic Circle for what I think is going to be a Russia-American alliance in the future.
But we already have control of the Arctic Circle.
Not to the level that we could.
Well, sure.
The concern here is because like Canada's more loyal to the EU than it is to America.
Yeah.
Right. It's like we got to stop thinking of America as like Europe as like America extended.
Right.
Because that's where I think the psyoping that comes with, like when I'm talking about the MI6 psyoping and like the controlling, like the influence in American media, that's what I'm talking about. Is the psyoping is coming out of Britain right now through MI6.
Yeah. And according to.
And the intelligence apparatus around it.
Right? Alex Jones on Tucker yesterday. The European Union is crumbling. Like that world order is in its kind of death throes
and,
right now.
And this is what Macron is important right now, because he's trying to become the supreme leader of Europe at the moment.
Okay, wait. Right. Hold on.
Him and his tranny wife.
Whoa, shots fired.
Right? All right, that's a big claim. So what is your case that Macron is like angling for French dominance in the EU?
I think that we've seen it over the last several decades right now, and the propping of him up. I came to this realization. It was actually Tom Luongo, who's an Austrian guy.
Yeah.
I was listening to him on a podcast recently, and he was talking about this, where his core belief of Trump getting us out of the Iran nuclear deal, for instance, actually had more to do with France than it did with anything else.
Okay.
And that was because there was a massive energy deal between France and Iran that was going on with uranium trade on this. And it was opening up the European sector to the Middle East. And what on the geopolitical scale right now that we've been seeing is Russia and America have been squeezing Europe away. Now you have people like the Biden administration and things like that. They've been like that kind of wing of American politics. They're kind of in the World Economic Forum milieu, you could say.
Yeah.
Where so like, and this is kind of like the free trade psyoping that's going, that kind of exists right here, is like, that is like, who benefits the most from it is Europe. Because it just allows them to continue to be the welfare queens of the world and just like extract all this value out of like America and things like that, right?
I think that's clearest when you look at the foreign policy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, to what degree our foreign policy across the Middle East has really not benefited us that much, but has benefited Europe enormously. Look at the Houthis. The entire reason why we're bombing the Houthis is because we want to defend European trade in that sea. So, why are we doing that, right? But that also calls the question is, if Trump's strategy really is to isolate Europe, why did we end up doing that with the Houthis?
Well, look at Syria right now. Turkey is distancing themselves more and more. Erdogan in particular is distancing himself more and more from Europe. And they're actually the ones that won out the most in the Syria collapse.
Yes.
Like Israel only took over, like Israel wanted much more, but Israel only took over the southern region. It was almost entirely taken over by Turkey. And this then moves into the Russia-US connection right now, right? Mm. And this to me is where the psyoping of like Trump's a Russian asset, all this stuff, like all of that is front loading what is like a clear danger. Pre-programming. Like you could say it's like pre-programming.
That is actually a pretty good example of pre-programming.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly it. Is they're pre-programming this, getting in the way of this Russia-United States connection. And then we're watching the splintering of Europe happening in real time. Italy is a traitor to the EU. Like they're supporting Trump, and
they elected a right wing populist.
And France is trying to. It seems to it's like France is trying to push them to bankruptcy along with Germany, right? But then also you have what's going on in the Eastern European front of
Romania
or Orban in his kind of strongmanness and Hungary. Kind of becoming this big in Hungary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then what's happening in Romania right now,
Georgescu.
Where we're watching Georgescu and just them suspending democracy.
Yeah.
Because order to protect democracy, like all that suspending democracy in order to protect democracy, that's all European shit.
Yeah.
Right. That's the European psyops that go on. Right?
Right. And the same thing's happening in Italy. Marie Le Pen has been
France.
Yes.
Yeah. Who's trying to compete against
has
Macron?
Been, yeah. Right? Has been forbidden from running in the election. Right. Yep.
So returning to Syria real quick. So Trump uses Turkish fighters to take on ISIS, stops funding ISIS with American tax dollar money, which was, I think, the right policy. Mm-hmm. And then it does kind of make sense of the timeline of like, oh shit, Trump's coming into office. We better take over Syria now on behalf of the EU. Like that's how you see the play, is ultimately this is a Turkish on behalf of EU play to control Syria.
Not on behalf of EU. I'm saying Turkey is splintering away from the EU.
To join like the American side of that dynamic?
To kind of be one of the major figures of the Middle Eastern region.
Well, I can see
moment,
that.
Right?
Like
the big thing right now is, and this is where like all the people that are like, Trump's in the tank for Israel, blah, blah, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't see that really. Like Israel's not getting everything they want. Like what I see the future is Trump is going to negotiate a peace deal with Russia and Ukraine. Like that's the foremost, most important thing right now. And then Russia is going to be at the talks at the table for kind of the restructuring of the Middle East with Trump. With the new, with how the new alliances are formed, like, and they're going to try to bring people together in that, in order to create a much more stable Middle East, but not one that has just like, this is the one superpower that we're going to pick, right? Like, and there's going to be the neocons and the, like, in the Zionists, like, they're going to be all like uppity in that, right? Iran's probably going to come to the table with that. I think that there's going to be some sort of like new energy deal that happens with Iran, with Russia. Saudi's at the table. They're going to have to get it. Like, everybody has to get along. Like, none of these people like each other, right? Like, this is going to be like the long-term project for the Middle East, is actually trying to bring some semblance of peace there. And one of those things is the Israel-Hamas situation has to be figured out, right? In order for that stuff to happen.
Yeah. Right? I think when people look at that, they're looking at a different level of resolution. So it's possible that both things can be true, that, you know, he's giving the Likud a lot of what they want while trying to do something long term with the Turks. Is that the argument? Like, that the at the end of the day, they want Turkey and Saudi Arabia to divvy up Eastern, the Western half of the Middle East, and then have Iran control the Eastern half. Is that what you're saying?
I got distracted by what was. I got a notification. Yeah. I got distracted.
Oh no, it's okay. I'm trying to understand your model here and how you're conceptualizing it.
I'm not saying that it's like necessarily an agreement or like a partnership between Israel and Turkey or something.
It has to be a formal thing. I'm just trying to understand. Like,
I'm saying Turkey's making power plays right
and
now.
What is Turkey's
for the broader scheme?
You think Turkey's going to push away from the EU?
Yeah. In push for this like Black Sea strategic alliance that we're going to see with like Romania and Hungary, kind of like those Eastern European countries, and Russia, and like all of that is going to be like a strategic trade alliance or something in that regards, I think.
Huh.
I think that's where the future will lie. And I'm saying like, this is a long time down the road, but I think that's where the geopolitical energy is moving.
It's an interesting idea at minimum.
Russia and America are going to carve up Europe.
Like, what does that mean?
Like, I think that the EU is going to collapse entirely. And I think that they're currently like in the middle of a rug pull right now. They're trying to get everybody to flood into their markets right now because we're the safe haven for Trump's tariff war, and we're just going to prop up our currency that really should be trading at like 140, but right, it's currently trading at like $1.04. The reason they're propping it up is because they're selling off all their treasuries and they're flooding their own markets. They're manipulating their currency in order to be like, we're the safe haven asset right now, and they're trying to become this thing. And I think that they're going to rug pull the world in this like economic Armageddon.
So what you mean by rug pull in this context is they're trying to position themselves as a strong currency
and then default
that people
reset.
Will buy.
This is the Great Reset.
But when people buy it, they're going to be like, whoops, we can actually financialize that.
We're at default.
And therefore, when they default,
create a new currency.
Whoa.
I think that's their goal.
Whoa. That would be some spicy stuff.
I think that's where capital markets are aiming. I think markets are looking at that.
But that doesn't mean the EU, like the euro doesn't go away then. They just reset the euro.
They reset it. They turn it into a digital currency, et cetera. All of the stuff that, but like, because like, this is the thing is like, what, like, this is a war against the pedophile vampires, as Alex Jones would talk about, right? But like, it's these like
psychic
old regime.
Vampires.
It's this old regime of people that are these like technocratic, like illiberal people, to use that term, right? Mm-hmm. That just want to like take. Like, and I think that we're watching the factional war play out in places like Britain, where Keir Starmer came in and bent the knee to Trump, and I think that we're probably going to end up seeing some sort of massive reshuffling in the UK. Because of him bending the knee there, to the point where we're probably going to end up seeing some sort of like coup on the British crown. Not like a violent coup.
It's
going to be like the current king is very World Economic Forum heavy.
He's
very much in that technocratic elite thing.
Right.
And we're going to move to, I forget the names of these people.
They don't matter.
It's like William and who's the other brother?
I have no idea. I'm an American. I don't have to care.
Yeah,
1776, buddy.
But they matter for Europe. But they matter for European markets.
Yeah, of course.
But
we're not saying they don't matter to other people. We're just saying they matter to us.
But this is part of the reordering process.
So you see them as like a figurehead that has to be moved out because at the end of the day, they're not heading the right direction of the big power players, which is this. So
Queen Elizabeth was not necessarily with them either, right? At the time, like when she moved out, the crown then became super World Economic Forum heavy. Like, she was much more of like this like old school aristocracy faction where like the new blood is much more in bed with the general economic theories of the World Economic Forum and places like that.
Satanic cabal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The psychic pedophile vampires.
Yes.
Yeah.
I need you to clarify one thing because we kind of glossed over, but you mentioned it twice. Keir Starmer coming to the U.S. and bending the knee to Trump. I know that there was a meeting between them. He was coming to the United States. What transpired there that makes it feel like he bent the knee?
Remember on the lead up, Keir Starmer like tweeted out or something about like America should join the Commonwealth.
Yes.
And
Alex Jones was like so pissed about it. I remember he was like all up in arms, like there's a coup going on against America. They want to try to get us to rejoin the UK. It's never going to happen.
And Trump literally retweeted, sounds good.
Yeah.
He retweeted it and was like, sounds good. Right.
What does that mean?
What does that even mean?
I don't even know what that means.
Like, is that a yes?
I think what we're seeing
is like, no, the best I can do is take Canada from you. I think that's what we're saying.
I'd like
right
to propose
now.
A trade.
Yeah. And because why is Canada significant? If we end up seeing a massive new trade deal form between Russia after the sanctions are over and the Ukrainian war settled and things like that, we probably see some sort of rail that goes from Russia to Alaska and down. And then we have to have a Canadian bridge that comes with that. Mm. And Alberta has oil. Saskatchewan has uranium. Manitoba, massive agriculture. Mm-hmm. Ontario has gold.
Mm.
It's
like we're playing Settlers of Catan right now.
And the British PSYOP has told Canada, you can't do anything with that.
Really?
Right?
Yeah.
They're not allowed to do anything with it because of all the environmental regulations and things like that.
Sure.
And this is also the need for deregulation here in America and why Bessent and Trump are so big on we have to monetize all of our assets. We have all these assets in the ground that our regulations will not let us touch.
Right.
Because in the global reordering of things, we have to monetize all that stuff. It's a big push. It's like Trump sees the writing on the walls here, right? I think Putin sees the writing on the walls here. I think Europe's only option here is like either they completely bend the knee and become America's bitch or they go to China.
Which, I mean, according to the interview between Tucker and Alex Jones, they were in bed with China, kind of helping China set up their, you know, CBDC and their social credit score and all that stuff. And then China flaked on their deal. Mm-hmm. And so now they're kind of swinging in the wind, seems like. I mean, according to him.
Well, and that's the big thing, too, is think about the last few hundred years is we're still, all of our maps are still focused on London as the center of everything. There's a center of Forex trade. They have a $7.5 trillion markets on Forex trading using the euro right now. I think that they would rather have World War III go off than them losing that market. Hmm. And I think that the new restructuring is it's much more of like focused on the Pacific. That is the new world order. Russia, America, China. That's where everything is happening. Europe, sorry, you're out of it.
Oh, wild. Wild.
And it's like when you put this in your framework, there's a lot of like crazy things where like, I don't understand why Trump did that. I don't understand why Trump did that. And there's a lot of things that start to be like, oh, things make more clear.
Like what?
He's at war with, the Iran nuclear deal was one. When I realized the French connection there, I was kind of like, oh, It's not so much about like Saudis were pissed about it and that led to Yemen and things like that, right? But like it was a deal between Iran, United States, France, and Britain. Mm. Right? Like that's what the deal was.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right? A fair point.
You know, like pulling out like the concern about pulling out of the Paris Climate Accords and stuff like that. Like a lot of these things are like, Obama's an idiot, he made bad deals, like that's the bravado on that to hit the base and things like that. But like there's actually much more savviness that's going on a geopolitical scale, right? Well, it's like they use those things, which is a very what's his name? The guy from National Review.
Brzezinski.
No, Burnham. Oh, it's a very Burnham Machiavellian argument.
Yeah.
Is that you use these like fantasy things, but you're actually doing this other stuff.
The actual power.
The actual power.
You got to sell the plebs on what you're really.
Yeah. So the plebs are like Israel and Japan and China and all this stuff. And like China's important, but like these are the moves that are being made on the chessboard.
So let me give you maybe a scenario that doesn't make sense to a lot of people, never made sense to me. And then you could put it into your model and tell me how I'm thinking, how I should think about it.
Maybe we'll see if my model breaks down.
Test the model.
I'm not trying to break your model. No. I'm just trying to understand. So the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement was an agreement that was being designed throughout the Obama administration in order to isolate China by creating a new free trade deal, freer trade. In net, was it mostly? A lot of people suggested it was. In net, lower trade barriers than what we currently had. But it's a corporate, you know, cronyist madness, just like NAFTA and all these other things, where it's really about the biggest players and the little guy gets screwed.
Always.
So, is that why did he pull out of the TPP when it was actually to isolate China and actually to harm China?
I don't know.
Well, it kind of makes sense in this sense. Mm-hmm. If you look at all the countries around them that the TPP was for, if the shift is to a global alliance with the United States and America and Japan and other South Asian countries against China, Russia wasn't part of it. But if you could kind of consider it like that, why pull out of it, granted that? Or maybe that wasn't his model at the time. He's evolved to this model. That could be the case. But it doesn't make a lot of sense to me if your arrangement is to isolate China.
Yeah.
Force them in the EU together.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I don't know too much. I don't know enough about the TPP and the structure of the deal on and the actual dynamics that were at play. So it's hard for me to actually comment on it with the framework.
Sure. It was pretty much every country.
Could be just like him thinking is like there needs to be like a massive restructuring of this deal. Like this deal that like hurts America or something. I could see him having that in his mind at the time. But there's also the first administration was so overloaded by people that had completely different frameworks, and the current administration is much more like
in sync,
cohesive,
in sync. Yeah.
Bye bye bye.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is the thing too, is like because we also have to look at the structure of like say the Five Eyes and stuff like that when we're talking about the intelligence. The reason why people like Tulsi Gabbard are so important is because her core job right now is to open up lines of communication on intelligence to the executive, because that just didn't exist before, right? Like that was and we're getting all this information being fed from people that are, because everybody's psyoping everybody. Like I'm not saying America's not psyoping Britain, America's not psyoping China, but the people in our own agreements, can we trust the information that's coming from them?
Yeah.
Like, and what information is getting to the president? What information is not getting to the president? How can the president actually make like useful, good decisions?
Without intel.
And if we can't trust the intel.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think that there's also like a lot of the intelligence apparatus stuff that's going on right there, especially when I'm talking about like they're psyoping us. And I think it's never been more clear ever since Trump got elected of like all these people that just activated. All these people that were on the right, and now they're just kind of like all the people preaching about the woke right and stuff like that. It's so like it just became so clear as like I came to the reason why the Daryl Cooper thing with Winston Churchill was a big deal wasn't about Israel. It was about Britain.
It was about obviously Churchill being a religious figure.
It challenges their core mythology.
Yeah.
And their national pride.
So that is why the reaction was so out of disproportion, is for especially on American Twitter.
Who'd it come from? It's all like the Brit lovers on the American right.
Anglophiles.
Yeah. It's Douglas Murray. It's like James Lindsay's American, but like it ever since Trump got elected, it became very clear to me is like he has this weird fetish for European interests. Like if you follow his thread on things, it's like a fetish for European interests. Like everybody's just like, oh, he's controlled by the Jews or whatever. Like that's not been my read. My read has been that he's controlled by like Europe is what it seems like to me. Huh. And that's not to be said, like there are also the hardcore Zionist type, and there's a Venn diagram that exists there.
Yeah.
Like Kamala. Well,
is that visualizing Israel's interests as a EU interest?
And I don't know what that Venn diagram is per se.
Yeah.
But there is a Venn diagram, and it's something like that. Is like, and I mean, when you look back at it,
global banking cartel.
Well,
Rothschilds. That's the Venn diagram.
Well, and that's actually the thing too. Is I haven't listened to the full thing yet, but I was listening to the Georgescu interview with Tucker, and at the very beginning of the interview is him talking about the European mafia. That controls the European globalist mafia is what he calls it. Right? It's like, that's what the war is. That's the fight. That's the enemy. It's not Europe per se, but it's like that group of entities.
Right.
They're still controlling onto this power and they're trying to orchestrate everything here. And that's why all of the Eastern European stuff is so, and like That's why they are continually wanting the Ukraine war to go on. Like, they're the ones that are pushing for this. It's like them and then their allies within the United States. But it's not like the United States.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, then there's the whole, like, spiritual war component that you could tie into that, you know, maybe a 3D Venn diagram, right? Israel being, you know, the core of Christianity and all global religion, you know, at least that component of it. And so, you know, obviously that plays into the pressure on Russia as well. Russia is a white Christian nation. Like, there's that piece if you want to go to that level.
Some of, like, the white identitarian stuff, I think, probably plays a big role in there.
Well, I mean, actually. And I think you're contrasting, like, a more secular transhumanist sort of vision from those kind of elitists out of Europe to a more traditionalist orientation from Romania, Hungary, Russia, places like that.
And this is also where the tech civil war is. The tech civil war is around similar dividing lines on the transhumanist stuff versus, like, say, like the Elon Musks and people like that, and kind of where that divide has happened. Like, it's a similar, like, spiritual side.
Yeah.
You know, like there's like a religious war that's happening right there.
I mean, it's sort of a battle for the soul of humanity.
Well, yeah. You call it epistemic. You cover a lot of different things, but it's something about, like, your vision of what is the future of man and what is the purpose of man is going to determine how you're falling on this fault line about how should we orientate towards technology, regulations of future, things like that.
Yeah.
Well, and this is a big thing too, is Putin invited Trump to Victory Day in May. May 9th, I believe, is the date. And we don't know if Trump has accepted it yet, but that'll be a very telling thing, I think, in overall with this. Mm-hmm. So, like, that'll be where the massive, okay, here's how we want to handle the peace negotiation type of stuff happens. Mm-hmm. So that's only a month away. That's also where, like, pray for Trump. 'Cause, like, coked up Ukrainians might do something.
Yeah. Wow. Right? They've assassinated quite a few people. Mm-hmm. Might be the folks that assassinated that Alex Jones reporter.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Like the Ukraine thing is.
And then you look at the Florida guy, you know, connected to Ukraine, connected to Intel. I mean, Florida shooter at the golf course for Trump.
Right. Right.
Tried to assassinate
Ryan Routh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, and that's another connection. That is a dangerous moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that'll be it. And remember,
watch the sloped rooftops, Secret Service.
Well, but also remember, like, there was a drone that hit the Kremlin. Right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That was an interesting moment.
Yeah.
Like, and there's been a lot of people that have been assassinated by Ukrainians in Russia. So that is a thing that Trump has to be weighing right now. And that's also another area where, like, these aren't types of conversations that can happen over phone call.
Right.
Because
everyone's listening.
Everyone's listening.
Right.
The British are listening.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure. Well, and I think, I mean, I kind of lost my train of thought. With Trump going to Victory Day, obviously Putin's going to have a ton of security. I mean, he's locked down as well as anybody, right? So you would expect it would be pretty safe. You would think.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
But if you're part of the opposition, he's out of the country. He's in a situation where you could say the Russians killed him. You know, that's what.
Well, wouldn't, the other wouldn't piece that is, be your Franz Ferdinand moment?
Though? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and the other piece of that is, what does that happening do to the people that perpetrate it? Right. And this came up again in that Alex Jones interview. It could be worse for the opposition to Trump, for the globalists, if Trump goes down, because then he's a martyr. And then there's, like, all this, like, outrage and activation and greater pushback to that whole movement.
Right. And that's the ultimate speculation is, how do it, like I said earlier, how do you offboard onto this into a reliable global trade system, right? Because as long as things move a lot, it's difficult to lay out the tracks of increasing your structure of production, because that requires some reliability of where you're sourcing materials and where interest rates are going to be at and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Second to that, like, who takes up the mantle of continuing that if it's not offboarded by the end of 4 years?
Right.
Who can, I mean, like, that's a really hard thing. And that's a lot of the gamble.
Right.
Is it going to be J.D. Vance?
Well, we know he hates Europe, so.
Yeah.
Well, and also, it's not even just the Signal text message thread where he just, like, did lambast Europe in there. But he had the recent thing going to, I think it was on a podcast that it was just you and me, Joe, where we played that, where he went to something in Europe, some event in Europe, where he just basically was just like, you guys should support free speech online.
Yes.
Because you guys are a bunch of commies right now.
Yeah.
He's like,
you talk all these platitudes about democracy, but you are not actually doing it.
Well, yeah. And then you have it. Like these generals coming up. So, the vice president of the United States, he says that we don't support democracy. How dare he?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, what's going on in all these European countries?
Yeah. Right.
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 You're getting in prison for Facebook posts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just political candidates.
Yeah.
Getting, wait, and this is another big thing. What's the big thing going on in Romania if Georgescu doesn't get elected?
Military base.
Biggest NATO military base ever.
Yep.
Yeah. And yep. So why if in your theory, Trump wants to establish that base, though, because he wants to create a deal for the Black Sea that includes American military assistance.
No, because that NATO base is more of a Europe thing, right? Like, I don't think that's like...
So, and this has always been one question for me. It was an interesting moment, the connection between security and trade. When we went to Canada and said, hey, tariffs or, you know, lock down your side of the border, same thing with Mexico, they capitulated. We got security, you know, benefits out of threatening a trade thing. Why wouldn't you do the opposite in Europe? Why wouldn't you go to them instead of doing the... You know, maybe you do the tariff stuff, but if you want to pour on extra pressure, say, I'm going to pull out all of our support of NATO and all of our support of the EU. We give lots of money to the EU, mm-hmm. Development grants, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Unless you USA drop your tariffs
money.
To zero.
USAID
right?
money.
Yeah, yeah. USAID money and everything
National
else.
National Endowment
right?
for Democracy. All these things are all these things are things that are propping up the euro.
Yeah, but I've been right? talking about direct... Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true. Some direct transfer between American, at least in the terms of military contracts, in terms of weapons, to NATO and the EU. How do we, you know, why not pull those and use that as your major, like, benefit for trade?
I think that's part of the. I mean, Trump's been no fan of NATO for a long time.
No, I know. I mean, like, actually take action there. Like, actually say, could just like he did table. On tariffs.
I think a lot of things have to wait for Ukraine. For the peace in Ukraine.
I think
most of this stuff has to wait on Ukraine because this is the framework that I'm operating on is that there are a bunch of freaky psychopaths in Europe that want World War III to happen between Russia and America.
For sure.
And America,
there's psychopaths here that want that.
Yeah, like exactly. Everywhere. And the neocon influence, like that connection to Europe is like a very strong thing. Mm-hmm. Like the neocon Europe connection and MI6 and this intelligence apparatus that I'm talking about in the World Economic Forum, these are all the same people. This is the same faction. That's why I'm saying it's transnational. When I talk about these things being transnational and these cliques that exist, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. It's like, the old empire kind of hanging on to power.
Exactly. Yeah. In a strange way, it's like the old British Empire.
Yeah.
Still in its death throes.
Mm-hmm. Takes a while.
In a weird way.
Yeah. Takes a while.
Which is kind of what happened in Rome, actually. Is it lasted for like hundreds of years after where everybody's still kind of pretending like the old British Empire is still existing. Like we're not calling it that, but like it is the same type of like the Sovereign right. Individual book talks
right.
about that.
They're looking around. They're like, all the leaders are Visigoths. How did that happen?
in Europe, in some ways, it's like, why are all of our leaders American now?
right.
Sounds like they need some freedom.
Yeah, and it's also this thing where it's like Russia, I don't think, has any actual interest in pushing through like Poland or anything like that. Like that is a British psyop. Like they're looking at Ukraine. Right.
Douglas Murray on the Dave Smith thing on Rogan said exactly that. Like, it's always relied on the psychologizing Putin's true motives for doing things, overemphasizing some statements, underemphasizing others, not looking at his direct incentives. Instead, just relying on your psychologizing of what he's really about. Because you can make that a religious tenet.
Rogan called him on the carpet on that. He's like, you know what he thinks about?
You know what he dreams of?
You know what he dreams of?
Yeah, right.
He's dreamed of, you know, reuniting the Soviet Union.
Yeah, like, right.
Oh, really?
Right. Can he comment there? Was he there? Was he in the Kremlin talking about this? Can he comment on that?
Has he been to the Kremlin?
Yeah. Has he been to the Kremlin?
Are you Putin's sleep paralysis demon? I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, like, and that's exactly, because like, when you start to see this, you just start to see, and like, I'm not saying all these people are like actual MI6 agents, but it's that kind of like blobby mentality that these people have. Like they're likely assets. He
graduated from Oxford. And not a small
with an English
recruitment
degree.
Area.
Yeah, with an English degree. He's like an expert.
Yeah, he's a super expert. Right?
Obviously.
But that kind of adds to your thesis that this is a cultural clique.
Yeah.
That spans industry. And of course, if you're intelligence, you would want assets and relationships within media. And that's what he is.
Yes.
He's a media person. He writes for the New York Post.
Yep.
I want to say. Mm-hmm. And has been writing in legacy media for a long time. So, and then obviously was on the wrong side of every single major foreign policy decision for 20 years. So,
And it's just this thing too, where it's like, we never talk about the relationship between Europe is always hunky dory.
Yeah.
Right. Like, but like, that's not actually true. Like, France hates us. like, what are we talking about? Like, right?
Well, it's because we're bagging on the president's wife.
And it's just like, all of those people, why are they so super gay?
Why are you gay?
Yeah, it's just like a very, speaking of our, my boy Bessent here.
Yeah, how far back does this model trace? Think about
250 years.
Think about French opposition, European opposition to the war in Iraq. How does that play? Right? Because we wanted to go in Iraq. They were like, no. George Bush is, you know, obviously not himself a neocon, but surrounded by mm-hmm. and heavily influenced by neocons like Dick Cheney and others within the administration. So, like, if the trying to like think about it, okay, if it predicts forward, does it explain backwards? How far mm-hmm. back does it explain? And maybe there's other variables we're not seeing, but
well, it's also these one of these things too where it's always important to remember the different factions and everything
Because it is out of line with what you would expect, right? Because mm-hmm. the UK was largely supportive, Germany, Australia, Canada, lots of other places in that was very much like, okay, go America's going to war in Iraq. But France was not in a big way and made a lot of noise about it. Remember Freedom Fries?
Oh, yeah.
Right. That's right. That was that response. Mm-hmm. So, and that could be, that kind of signals some of the power dynamic possibly too. Continental Europeans and France being much more vocal and pushing back against America, even as we're like, you're our vassal states, right? And they don't recognize that.
Another area of disconnect, and this is one of the things that has always sat very strangely in my mind, was going back all the way to like 2015, something like that. The dynamic at play where I saw all the like American very pro-free traders all the time, they were extremely supportive of Brexit while simultaneously being extremely supportive of Macron when Macron came in. And I was like, those are different things.
Mm.
Those are completely different things.
Say that again. Who was supportive of Brexit and Macron?
All the American free traders. Because
who do you have in mind? Like who's in your head when you're saying that?
Like all the free trade conservatives, all the free trade libertarians, all of like the Koch brothers.
Was supportive of Macron?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. In 2015. Oh yeah. I remembered it being Macron. Very like, cause like Brexit and Macron were happening at the same time. And I watched the like orgasmic love pouring out from Macron when Macron came in from these types.
I missed that.
Well, Brexit was happening.
Hmm.
And it was just like, those are different things.
Yeah.
Those are like polar opposite things.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and it was one of these things where it's like, there's a disconnect there. And I don't think a lot of people understand the disconnect of what's happening in Europe right now.
Huh. Don't have to do it right now, but I'd be very curious, like what that was.
Yeah.
Cause I totally missed,
I remembered it when
right
I was
libertarian
like,
tights being super pumped on Macron.
Cause I remembered it at the time. Cause I was like 1920 at the time and like really getting involved in politics and being involved in this time. And I just remembered all the people around me having this like deep love for Macron.
I don't remember Macron at all being a variable in 2015.
I remembered it
in American politics, but I just missed it.
It was like this glorious thing that was happening in France at the time, and it's going to open up these glorious free trade revelations and all this stuff. It was very built, and they're not doing that crazy stuff that's happening in Brexit. But in the meantime, a lot of the people that were loving Macron, they loved the individual freedom, separation from the global order that was happening at Brexit, and it was like a strange psychological disconnect that was happening.
So let me solidify one thing for potential autists in the crowd like me. The use of free trade, the weaponization of the idea of free trade, is separate from your support of free trade. Right? You can be pro free trade and say, well, economically, the flywheel of human progress is the division of labor and natural resources that allow people to get access to goods and resources that allow them to be prosperous. You can believe that while believing at the same time that rhetoric is weaponized in conditional circumstances in order to get a political end that you want, such as what you're describing. Does that make sense? So it's possible in the same person to hold both views.
Well, and I think largely libertarians got psyoped by the British in the support of this free trade model that is not free trade. Right.
Well, I think that's kind of
an area of where things happen.
You could be good. You could be a good faith person. Look at like, for example, Trans-Pacific Partnership's one of the most recent biggest ones. And it was understandable when people would say like, well, does it in net produce more free trade than otherwise and make us more prosperous? Yes. So therefore good. But you could also take the more Misesian approach, which is like, this is a big cronyist you know, deal that's actually going to squeeze out the little guy. While it's good that we're doing more trade, it's not good to do it this way because of the the nature of these big deals and how they work on interest group rather than on actual freedom.
And that's kind of what I want to get across with like this tariff conversation. That's why it's more nuanced than just being like, tariffs bad, trade good. Because that's the annoying conversation that is happening around this. It's just like, have you heard about iPencil? You know, like, right? Like, well, that's the type of thing.
A lot of people haven't too, though, Kyle. Yeah. Like, a lot of people are like for the first time contending with what is the global trade system and where does our prosperity come from. I understand when people want to educate the public about that and take advantage of the opportunity. At the same time, that doesn't mean that there isn't a multivariable calculus going on that you should consider. One of the best people who have been contending, I think, with this from an academic angle is Bob Murphy in his stuff. Like he's really contending with all of their deficits of, you know, taking what the president's saying as seriously as you can, and then like trying to, okay, what are the economic implications of this? What's the best case? What's the steel man for the opposition and how this will actually play out according to economic principles?
Yeah.
To me, the best people that have played out in during this whole endeavor have been Bob Murphy, Clint Russell, and Tom Luongo. Those are the best people out of the libertarian sphere of understanding the practical reality that we're existing in right now.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of utopian fantasies in Disneyland
if you're not aware of the other variables such as like the bond market and things like that, you could just look at it and be like, well, this is a bad thing, because if you're not engaged with those other parts of the argument, it's really it's easy to keep a simpler mindset and be like, well, I'm a libertarian, so I'm pro free trade. That's fine, but you got to engage with all the other stuff. And when you engage with the other stuff, you're going to look at a much more complicated picture.
Be wary of how your heuristics are going to be used against you. Like, that's what I would say about that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is that a lot of people have instinctual heuristics and they get caught up in the mousetraps.
I think economic thinking isn't heuristic. So you can apply economic thinking and work on first principles and get to an answer. But if you're not addressing all the different arguments, you're going to be limited and to the degree which you're facing with reality, right? There are other variables at play. So if you're just looking at trade in a box in a isolated chamber, it's going to look like a very bad phenomena. But when you consider everything else going on, and then it's like that same emphasis thing. If you think this is all for balancing trade deficits, then it's going to look terrible, right? Because trade deficits is not a sensible policy for all the reasons we've highlighted on our podcast.
And Bessent has even said this. Bessent will say like the balancing doesn't necessarily have to be this like exact economic one-for-one balancing. A lot of the things that are being structured in the deals with Japan and South Korea, for instance, is that they're going to be involved in the finance side of the large-scale energy production that we're going to be doing in Alaska. So like, it's not just like we trade with you, you trade for us. Those have to be balanced. It's like, no, it's like, the services side of this is like, we just want to come to a more mutually beneficial agreement for everybody here. It's just like trade is good, but you can always make trade better. Right?
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess if the way, does it trigger a signal for your sense of, opposition to being centrally planned by a treasury secretary to have a deal cut for energy financing in Alaska with the South Koreans?
I think we still live in nation states.
No. I'm just talking about like, should it be a bidding process where like individuals build it based upon like market conditions, or should it be organized by the treasury secretary?
There is one concern here that is maybe worthwhile for a libertarian domestic critique of perhaps a lack of competition that is being had in a lot of these new national champions that I see forming. Hmm. I think there is a critique of the overall plan here there is a lot of cronyism at play.
Yeah.
But mafias are going to do what mafias are going to do. Right. So I think that there's a useful libertarian critique of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's also the practical reality of this is what is going to be happening.
There's a big, and I'm trying to be charitable here. It's a function of describing what is, not describing what ought. Now, the ask is what ought, right? Is there a better ought that you can visualize here for how to not wind up where we have an even more top down, centralized, benefits going to rent seekers who are closest to the Trump administration and closest to the new arrangement.
I think that's a valid concern.
An arrangement that evolves due to people's capacity to solve problems for other people, mm-hmm. bottom up.
Yeah, I think that's a valid concern. Like the bottom up versus top down thing is always going to be a thing that's at play on the domestic side. Mm-hmm. I think that's real. Mm, yeah. It's also just like, don't get too wrapped up in it, in my mind.
Yeah. Well, you got to keep flexible. Yeah. You got to be more flexible with that and address the other pictures, address the other questions.
Like there are going to be selected chosen people. Yeah. That, like that's going to be the nature of all of this that's happening in an economic reordering around the world.
Yeah.
Like that's going to be the case. Mm-hmm. Certain people are going to draw up the lines. Certain people are going to divvy out the money. Certain people are going to that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Questions what to do about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'd love to know what you would do about it. What do you think of this whole situation?
Am I full of shit?
Is Kyle full of shit? Let us know in the comments. And if you want to get engaged in the conversation, join our Discord. The link is in the description and in the show notes, wherever you're watching this podcast. Thanks so much for sticking around and running along with us today. I thought that was a really fun segment of dubious speculation. I like your theory, Kyle. I want to see if it plays out.
Grok likes my theory too.
I
had a lot of conversations with Grok about it.
You said that earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm getting grown concerned. Was it on sexy mode?
It was not on sexy mode.
I love your theory, big boy.
She was not talking.
Tell me more.
But Grok did seem interested in fucking over Europe.
In sexy mode.
With all right.
For David Rand, for Kyle Mack, I'm Joe Sheehan. We'll see you in the next one.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.